This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Embracing Change. I hope you guys are really enjoying this season of the podcast where we're talking about changing the person in the mirror. Change is a hard, hard subject for some folks because I think we had said this before. Rarely do people change when they are comfortable. Usually it's
and
being very
one thing about it is the hardest thing, but it's the only thing that is consistent.
Yeah.
It's change.
That's true.
Whether you embrace it or not, change happens.
Yeah. That's very true.
Like, we're getting ready to go and change from 2020 to 2021. But how many people were looking for 2020? That was a big year. Mm-hmm. And now we're today is December 21st, 2020. And I'm sure everybody's looking for 2021.
Absolutely. And it'll be interesting in 2021 how the effect of 2020 and all of that unexpected upheaval.
Oh, because it's coming. Well, there is going to be side effects from 2020.
I believe long term. Yeah, I believe
long term. I think that there's going to be so much change coming from that. A lot of homelessness, a lot of mental illness, a lot of drug abuse, a lot of marriages that broke up, a lot of divorces, a lot of children feeling inadequate because coronavirus brought a piece to it that said, that God said it's not good for man to be alone. He didn't mean just about being with other people, but I also know he meant not to be alone, meaning always connecting to something bigger than yourself, meaning him. And so even if people was alone and died, if they had him, they didn't die alone.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just so much of the things from coronavirus that for me is bringing on change. I'm always looking forward to forward movement. I just don't want us to get so comfortable that we go back to who we were before coronavirus. Because hopefully we all can look at reflective moments of accountability and found out as we looked at ourselves when we were forced to look at the person in the mirror because there was nobody else around and you couldn't do anything. A lot of stuff for the first 6 to 8 weeks in most cities, things were closed. So those 6 to 8 weeks, you had to deal with yourself. What did you learn about yourself in 2020? I believe 2020 was about vision, but it was about vision of seeing you. The 2020 vision that we were birthed with, and then as we grow, we get stigmatism in our eyes, and we get cataracts, and we get glaucoma, and we get all those eye diseases because we don't see ourselves clearly. So we see them from a shadow. And I believe we had a season in 2020. It wasn't about other people. It was about us. Who am I at the core of my existence? Or who am I not? And what do I need to let go of going into 2021? The beginning, to me, it starts over. If you look at your life numerically, everything only goes to 10, and then it goes to 11, and it starts over again. We are dealing with life in 10-year cycles, decades. The number doesn't go higher. It goes higher in numbers, but it doesn't go higher. It all starts back with one. And who is the one you're looking at? If it's not yourself, who are you looking at?
That's a good jumping off point for today's subject related to change, and that is accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking just a few minutes ago before we jumped into the podcast about how people see accountability
as responsibility.
As responsibility. So let's just jump into that a little bit.
Well, I think that what I've learned is that when I listen, and I work with people all the time, so I tell people I have my PhD, my personal history degree, with working with myself, you know, working with myself, working with other people, collaborating first with God, because as I say to everyone, everybody has to decide their own spiritual journey, but mine has and is and will always be my faith in Christ and Him crucified. and that I want to be more like him because I'm made in his image and after his likeness, and I'm not going to compromise that anymore.
Yeah.
And so in no other way, I don't care. That's who I am. I have a right to have my voice. You have a right to have yours. I have a right to have mine. And that's my belief. And so this journey, my first accountability was realizing to take ownership. See, accountability is an ownership. You have to own it. Whereas responsibility is a task. So if I give you a responsibility and I say to you, Jennifer, I'm going to need you to type this letter. I'm giving you a responsibility. Then you take responsibility to get it done. So it's sometimes responsibility can be one and done. Accountability is ownership. It is consistent. It's constant. And so you have to invite other people into your life, especially the piece of yourself that you don't have. Because I don't have everything. I have a ministry. I oversee a ministry of women and men in the process of becoming disciples. And, of course, City Gospel Mission calls it recovery. And recovery is recovering and restoring themselves, getting back to who they are. Well, it takes a team to do that. And so even though I may be the person that God used to bring it into fruition, I don't do it by myself. But for a long time, I took responsibility and accountability. I was the owner, and I was doing all the tasks. And you can wear yourself out. And so I had to learn, because I wasn't good in relationships, to be accountable is to actually take ownership in what I say I want. So if I want to change, I must own it. And I don't know if everyone likes to own the inadequacies or the things they discover about themselves. We like to blame. For a long time, I blamed my mom for giving me away. I blamed the man who abused me. I blamed the judge. It was until I took ownership that they may have did all those different things to me. The man may have raped me. My mother may have abandoned me, which leaves a hole in your soul. And the judge that I looked up to, who I thought was going to save me, put me in a mental hospital and left me there. So he abandoned me too. And so I disrespected authority. But until I took ownership to realize everything that happened to me after that was me.
From the choices you made.
From the choices I made.
Yeah, whether you were actively thinking about it or not.
It was still me.
Yeah.
I had to be accountable to the choices I made because of the pain I was in. And then I had to take responsibility to do something different, to create a task list, a list of tasks that I needed to take responsibility to do to change the place I was in.
That reminds me of someone had said once, you shouldn't live with regret. And they were challenged in, okay, well, what do you mean by regret? And they said, well, just looking back at decisions and things, actions I've done in my past, I don't wallow in them and shame myself and carry like mounds of guilt. I own up to them and I move forward and process those through however you do it. And I thought that was kind of refreshing, because a lot of people, when they are looking at the things that they've done in their past, they do kind of wallow in it. I know I for one, I've done that a lot. Look back at things I've done, and rather than say, okay, so I made a bad decision, I'm going to learn from it, I'm going to see why I made the decisions I made, take responsibility, accountability, and go forward, there would be times that I couldn't get out of that wallow of, oh man, I really messed up. I can't fix it. I wish I could fix it. I wish I could change it. Having all the conversations in my head that, you know, with the people that maybe it involves someone else. You know what I'm saying?
So, I do. And most of us, that's why I said earlier, it's mental activity.
Yeah.
It's in your head.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've had to learn is, you know, accountability is what happens after a decision is made. You first got to make that decision, and then you have to be willing to step up for your choices and the outcomes. And you have to realize what it is for you that you need in order to get from point A to point B, from point B to point C, from point C to point D. What do you need? Because not all of us, though we all have fingerprints, we all are different. And so how you're made and how I'm made is different, and how I need to get from point A to point B may be different. So I need to find out what is the accountability tools that I'll need in order to get there. You know, I define accountability as being naked and unashamed. See, that means I'm going to just take my clothes off. Don't have that visual, y'all. But just take your clothes off, meaning things that you've clothed yourself with that's not the truth.
Right.
And stand in it, as you just said, that I make mistakes. I'm not perfect. My God. Hallelujah. I make mistakes and I'm not perfect. So when I say that to myself enough, when I make the mistake, I won't waddle in it.
Right.
Because it's no biggie. You know, it's going to happen. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm going to not do everything right. My God, that's freeing.
Yes.
That's freedom. To not hold myself in to an unexpected, unrealistic cage that don't make sense. That's taking accountability. That's owning it. And if other people can't embrace that about you, you probably need to check who you got in your life. If they're looking for some perfect person, which they are not either, and then why do you feel like you need to be perfect for other people? Because that says something about you. It don't say something about them. It says something about you. What's missing, again, what's the hole in your soul that you're filling to make yourself perfect?
So when you were looking for your own accountability, were you looking for people that, you just kind of alluded to it, but looking for people that would challenge you? Related to whether or not you were being honest with yourself, or you maybe were taking a wrong step.
Where counseling came in.
Yeah.
My first step for accountability was counseling, dealing with the healing the child within. And so learning that I needed to share my story, but I needed to be able to share it with someone that would then help me to understand it or be able to relate to it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
So then I can kind of throw it all out there on the table and then see the pieces I still need and the ones that I may freeze for later. But the reality of it is looking at my truth for what it is now. So that was my first accountability. My second accountability was when I got connected to the body of Christ. And I realized that there was a power greater than myself, that I no longer had to totally depend on me anymore. Wow, what freedom.
Mm-hmm.
To realize there was something outside of me that I could connect myself to, or I was already connected to, but did not realize I was. And that through my whole journey, I had been protected. They had been, you know, that power had already been responsible for me. I probably should be life in prison for some of the things I did. But I didn't always get the outcome for the choices I made. And I realized that more and more I got closer to God, and I got closer to understanding who He was in my own relationship to Him and my accountability to Jesus and to the Trinity and to the Holy Spirit. And there was a comforter that was going to guide me into all truth. And what does that mean? And began to go to, you know, to church and go to Bible study and find other people like-minded with me and begin to learn about things that I didn't even know existed. Those were accountability steps. Going to NA and AA and finding people that were different than me but yet had some of the same issues. See, theirs may have been drugs or alcohol. Mine was going to prison. It's still a prison, right?
Mm.
So they were just teaching me principles. And one of the things I loved about what they used to say is principles before personalities. You know, that if you use the traditions and the principles, don't worry about the mouth is coming out of. You may not even like the person. You may not even get along with them. But don't let the personality stop you from getting the message. And so often we do that as people. We let personalities become bigger than principles. And so I had to learn for myself, I'm a black and white thinker. Most of us are. If you look back at your own life today, how often do you really see the world as either or instead of and in both?
All the time, I think.
Most of us do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just say most religious fanatics really do. It's either or. No, it's all and both. And learning how to let go of that thinking for me and find the gray, which says life is full of options. Because see, it was either I was going to be all in or all out. But I couldn't have both. I could be in and out. That means that's where imperfection comes in. I'm not going to always show up at my best every day. That's okay. But I showed up. So I had to learn to let go of that absolute thinking. Because that's what black and white thinking is. Black and white thinking is all or nothing, extreme thinking. And that is really defeating. And it's hard on yourself. And you really do put yourself in your own prison. And so I had to learn how to let that go and be accountable to a different kind of thinking process. And what I learned was the gray thinking. And gray says it's and in both. All options are necessary. One of the things I've learned about that is, you know, which leads to, you know, the thing that I'm learning most about the how we think in ways of, you know, like either or. It's like, and I think that the people I work with, a lot of times that they go back to relapsing and drugs or old behaviors because they don't get past the either or thinking and realize they can have and in both. And that's where the algorithms of thinking comes in. And all an algorithm is, if you're familiar with computers, a lot of people use it through computers, but it came out eventually, the original history of algorithm came from a man about numbers and adding and subtracting and multiplying and division and fractions and the Roman numbers. It came from him. And now, of course, we hear about algorithms all the time, whether it is in the voting or whether it is computers. And all it is step-by-step solving a problem. That's all it is. So when you program a computer, you're programming it, whether it's Microsoft or whether it is different programs. You know, iPhone and Microsoft, you know, Bill Gates, that's why they're so rich, because they found an algorithm to create Microsoft, and then you have iPhones and, you know, Steve Jobs, and they found a way to solve a problem that they seen that was going to be needed years ahead. They saw the things we're doing now in 2020, where we are on Zoom calls and Teams and those kind of things, they saw them back then. So they were solving a problem that they didn't know. I feel like they knew that we were going to need it. And so it has built itself up. And just think if they didn't create that. So those algorithms, how would we have done what we've been doing and still exist, still be able to connect with each other through Teams and iPhones where I can see FaceTime and do those kind of things? And it's like you're learning that there's an order of operation in accountability. There's an order of how you operate. And people always ask, oh, what does that mean? How you start to solve the problem is the order of operation.
You would say the how is first in that order of operation.
Exactly. It is. It's like the order of operation is the process and the progress. It's left to right. Sometimes it's left to right. Sometimes it's right to left. Sometimes it's left and right. So I think the order is necessary, the how. Not always the same how is going to be necessary for every problem. And you've got to figure out what is the best how to solve the problem you're in. So what accountability do you need? Do you need if you want to be healthy, do you need a dietitian? Do you need a trainer? When I was first learning Sydell Bradley, I didn't know how to enunciate words a lot. I still have problems. And I always ask the Lord, what is that? And so what it is sometimes my brain thinks faster than my mouth can speak. So I hired her to help me begin to enunciate words. Because when you realize, when you look in the mirror and you realize you struggle with that, some people stutter, some people, you know, do different things, but I was not able to enunciate words properly. So I had to find a way to get a picture in my head in order to bring the word. So it's like if it's grin, then it's brin. If it's this, it's that. And so I had to learn and then look up the word and the synonyms and what did they mean and the definitions. But I needed to be accountable, because if I knew that God is calling me to speak, then I needed to be clear. I needed to be able, people needed to understand me. I remember the first word she showed me was asking. So it was ask and king. And you put them together, it's asking. Where I used to just say ask. And she'd be like, no, that's not the word. You're not enunciating it properly. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to ask him. She's like, no, you're going to ask him. Or you're asking him. So I had to learn those words in that way, because sometimes we don't see or we didn't get it in school or did, you know, so as we get grown again, as I look at the person in the mirror, I'm redeveloping her. So any area that I'm not, I'm going to find accountability people to help me, because everyone has a gift. And if we loan each other each other's gift, the world will be a better place to live in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a net around each other.
Exactly, it's using your skills.
Yeah,
it's creating new concepts. That's what algorithm thinking is. It's ability to, you know, knowing your capabilities or your not capabilities.
Your limitations, yeah.
And your limitations.
Yeah. And being honest about that.
And being honest. And it's also about making a commitment to yourself first, that you're gonna be the best version of you. Because I cannot give you what I do not have.
Right.
I wish we quit faking like we got more than we do. And just be authentically transparent to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I don't know. Or to even say, I don't know yet. I will get back with you.
Or even admitting when you're having maybe an ugly feeling about something, instead of saying, oh, I'm okay, that's all right, what have you. I was in a situation just recently where I was experiencing some jealousy, and the natural inclination would have been to protect myself and say, oh, I'm all right, it's fine, I'm going to work this out, instead of just saying to this other person, hey, I'm feeling jealous, and that's probably driving some of why I'm a little moody, and so I just want to tell you that that's the truth of it, and I know I can work that through, instead of saying that I was, you know, the facade. We were talking about makeup and facades in the last podcast. So, but in doing that and saying this is really what I'm feeling, that created a really nice accountability to them, because now they understand maybe what would motivate me in a particular situation, that it would cause jealousy, therefore I might feel a certain way, might think a certain way, and to just challenge that.
Exactly.
So that was really good. It was a lot of freedom, but it was fear, like we talked about that in the last podcast as well, like fear of admitting where you are and how, while there it's fearful, there's also freedom, because then you don't have to pretend, but you still have to be gut level honest and really work that through, and that can be really scary.
Come on, because and everybody's I'm learning that everybody's order of operation is different. That's why you've got to find what you're comfortable with. And not, you can't trust everybody either.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Because there are some people that are not changing themselves. And they will use your wounds to their advantage.
Oh, yeah.
And trust me, I know. Because I used to be one of those people. I was always, I used to be a person that I'm going to get you before you get me kind of girl. So if you let me know something about you, I knew how to manipulate and control you just by your emotions. And so I would do that. And sometimes I did it unconscious. Sometimes I did it very consciously aware of it, because I wanted a certain outcome, because something was voided in me.
Yeah.
And now I realize I don't need to do that. I'm just I am me. Like, this is who I am. And I'm learning that not everyone, I don't need to always change to make other people feel good about themselves either. I can't tell you how to experience me, but if you tell me that you're experiencing me in a way that's not healthy, I'm going to look at it. And then if I don't believe it's me, it's really your unhealthiness instead of mine, I'm going to tell you. And you and I have had hard conversations.
We have.
You know, when I say to you, Jennifer, no, I'm not going to own that. I think you're going to have to go look at that yourself. It's almost like when I say, don't go in the light, Jennifer. Don't go to the light. You know what I mean? Come back.
Don't go to that path where it's
And the light is in that moment where that light is pulling you out of real truth, too. Or don't go into the darkness. Don't go into the outer world. Stay right here in the moment. You know, don't go down that rabbit hole. It's going to take you somewhere you don't want to go. And you have to have enough people in your life accountable that you trust that's going to tell you the truth.
Right.
You don't need yes people around you. You need a few every now and then to encourage you. But you don't need that's if you get everybody around you saying yes, that is a red flag. Run.
Well, and I think saying yes and encouraging are two different things.
Exactly.
Now, encouraging is like when someone is a good encourager, they're seeing something that you're doing right or good or a trait that you have that is right and good, and they are helping you see that that is a really good thing in you, and they encourage you. That's different than just, oh yeah, no matter what, anything you do is good. I'm a yes person. I'm just going to always tell you you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, which is way not true.
Yeah, and it's like I'm in a relationship now with someone that I've been in the relationship for over 20 years, but I'm just now, they're just not able to tell me truth. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
What is that about? And they it really had nothing to do with me as much as it had to do with them. And they finally admitted, I was intimidated by you. I was afraid that if I tell you that, you may leave or you may do this. So it don't say nothing about me. It says everything about them.
Right.
And then I had to look at myself and say all this time, then it makes me question then a lot of our relationship. And so I've had to really deal with that in a way that says, you know, that so I don't go to all or nothing thinking, that I have to go in algorithms and look at the gray moment and look at how much of our relationship was authentically real, how much it was just this or that, and then be able to go forward in this relationship and try to build from that place. You know what I mean? From that place where I'm mindful of how I approach that person. I try to be mindful when I'm in the environment with that person. I try to put on my, you know what I'm saying, try not to intimidate, but you know what I've learned? My best can be intimidating. I'm just keeping it 100. You know, my presence within itself, I hear people say that to me, that the first thing, sometimes I get a little nervous when I see you, and then I realize that it's not that bad, you know. But my first reaction is I'd be a little nervous. And I'm like, why is that? And the Lord's been showing me, Lucretia, you are who you are. And people sometimes believe you see through them. They just believe you can just like got these razor eyes and you just see through them immediately. Because you do know people, but you know, and the reason you know people is because you know you.
Yeah. You're strong, and sometimes people have a hard time relating to a very strong person, which doesn't really say anything about the strong person as much as it says about you that, or the, you know, the person that's struggling, that maybe they don't feel really secure with themselves, and so somebody strong would kind of intimidate them a bit.
You know, and as we, I know we're about ready to close, but one of the things I want to say is that in closing, we got to be intentional about what it is we want. You know, when we talk about the journey of change, meaning the first place, the why is in front of the what, and then the how is next to the when. And you've got to be intentional. And then you have to, I want to say this, the real voyage of discovery consists of not in seeking new landscape, but in having new eyes. You've got to be willing to change your vision about how you see things. Stay in the mirror. Look at yourself. Don't project on the other people until you know what's inside of you.
Yeah. And look at how you're, when you are projecting, like, where does that come from? Is there something that I need to work on to not do that?
Exactly.
Yeah. That takes vulnerability, takes honesty.
And when you see people for who they are, I always say accept them.
Yeah.
You know, because insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. Yeah. Because guess what? 99.9, as Maya Angelou used to always say, when people tell you who they are, believe them. That don't mean that they won't be somebody else 10 years from now, right, if they are willing to look at themselves in the mirror. But at the core of their existence, that is who they are. The sadness is we're always trying to change people to make them someone we want them to be.
Right, right. Trying to fix them or what have you. Yeah.
We put on our super capes.
Yeah. We do the rescuing or try to. Yeah, rarely does that
work out. Or the changing.
Yeah, yeah.
When change starts with the individual, all I can do is help you be a part of the change if you invite me in to the journey. But I can't force the change on you. I'm learning in this season of my life is to tell you truth, but it's not my responsibility. It's not my task, which is responsibility, to get in the seat and tell you how to accept it.
Yeah.
That's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
My responsibility is to share the truth with you. And then hopefully you will be accountable to take ownership on it.
One last thing in closing. We had talked about this early on, but you were talking about that you found places to be accountable. And you said you had went to your church, mm-hmm, and you found accountability there. That goes back to discipleship, which, mm-hmm, is a lot of what we do in recovery here. That while there are some that have drug and alcohol problems, there might be other life-controlling issues that they need to be discipled and walk through, just like all of us.
Right. So, this is what my friend said, Teresa. I talked to her yesterday, and she said the one thing she loved about being and having the courage to change was because there was all walks of life there.
Yeah.
And she realized that it helped her realize that hers may have been drugs, but she knew that if hers was drugs and somebody else's was a different issue, that she could learn from them just like they could learn from her.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because where she was hurting, they were not. And where they were hurting, she was not. So they were able to exchange information in areas that was more healthier. So she found that there were some people healthier in areas than she was.
Yeah.
And she was healthier in certain areas than they were. So they were able to exchange skills and capabilities. And that's why it's so important that it's diverse in a culture, and that now it's not just one thing, it is all things. Anything broken that keeps you from having the best life possible.
Yeah.
You need to be accountable. And you need to execute a plan to help yourself change the person you desire to become.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's a really good place to end it. Thank you for this great conversation. And folks, if you want to give any feedback or if you just have a question for Lakrita, you can reach out to the email that is in the description of the podcast, and we will gladly get back with you. And thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time. Hey there. Before you go, I wanted to share with you a cause that is very near and dear to Lakrita's heart. That is City Gospel Mission. City Gospel Mission has operated in the Cincinnati area since 1924, providing recovery services to those who have life-controlling issues, food for the hungry, shelter for the homeless, youth services, and job services. To find out more about how to give or to volunteer, go to www.citygospelmission.org. That's www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lakrita Bowman.